Thank you, Dawn. Hey, everybody. it's funny. I was just thinking about how when people talk about the retreat house, they talk about how great Cheryl's cooking is and how clean the house is, and which is all true. And then when I get on here and I listen to Dawn, I'm like, oh my God, it's the same thing. It's like, oh, she does so wonderfully. She just does it great. So we have wonderful people here, and I am just really talented people, and I'm thrilled to be a part of this organization. I will start this with a song, but I got to pull the right one up. And let me find you again. Is this the one, did Regina play a song in that? Oh, maybe I don't want to play that because I was going to play the one she played. I got one. Wait a minute. Let me go get it. That would be too much of a good thing, I think. Hey, Dawn, can you play a song for me? Because I can't find it or pull it up. But can you play that same one we played on Sunday? Ricky Nelson, I Will Follow You, or him, or no, it's not him. He wouldn't follow him. Not in those days, anyway. He wouldn't admit it. I'll shut up while you play a song.
I will follow you wherever you may go. There isn't an ocean too deep, a mountain so high it can keep me away. I must follow you, ever since you touched my hand I know.
Thank you so much. It was great. I see the girls are still goo-goo out over Ricky. all right. So that was fun. Nice way to start. What we've been doing in this program is reading Locke Kelly's book, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. Yes. So we will continue to do that with commentary by Jacqueline Eckert. So, last week we looked at a section of the book called Introducing Awake Awareness. We're going to finish up that section today. And then, well, we'll see where we get. So, let me just begin. The practice of effortless mindfulness begins as a simple shift or letting go to discover a naturally awake awareness that is already present all around and within us. One of my students, Locke students, one of my students described the experience like this. I'm not aware of an open mind and an open heart. I'm aware from an open mind and heart that is connected to everything. And of course, that's what he keeps talking to us about, right? He's teaching us to be in that space and be aware from that space. He says, when we tap into this feeling of viewing from our wordless, awake awareness, it opens us to a relief from suffering, natural joy, and compassionate connection with people and the world around us. I don't know if anybody's following along, but I will say I'm on page 19. We have been taught that our intelligence, identity, and safety are based on developing and being centered in thought-based knowing, or what I will call our small mind, thought-based knowing. We call a number of things ego, chattering mind. When we shift from our small mind to awake awareness as the source of mind, we discover that we are already effortlessly mindful. I'm going to read that sentence again. When we shift from our small mind to awake awareness as the source of mind, we discover that we are already effortlessly mindful. You know, and that's that dropping. We often talk about it in terms of dropping from the head to the heart. And then there's nothing to do but rest there, right? Effortless mindfulness is the way of knowing, creating, and relating from awake awareness. Although effortless mindfulness begins by letting go of everything, we ultimately become embodied, energetic, loving, and fully human. Okay, and so now it's time for a glimpse. So, yay! I am going to play some soft background music so the folks on the radio know we're still here. And, okay. We want you to keep your eyes open for this one. And this glimpse is called Eyes of Awareness. With a soft gaze, simply see what is here in front of you. Soft gaze. Notice the awareness that is looking through your eyes. Now, close your eyes and notice the same awareness that was looking out, still here. Simply rest as this wordless awareness, which is now aware of itself. Without creating a thinker, be the awareness that welcomes and includes everything. I'm going to ask you to slowly open your eyes and and bring that awareness back into the next dream. Sweet. I do want to mention something that was in that glimpse. In fact, I highlighted it the first time I read the book. You probably already know what I'm going to go to. And I think he talks about it in here. And I think we probably talked about it in our song with Locke. That final instruction in that glimpse about without creating a thinker. And I just want to talk about that for a minute because it's just really fascinating. I think Paul Hederman talks about this. I think Fred Davis talks about this. They may use a little bit different words, but the whole idea is in order to have a thought, in order to give believing attention to a thought, to go, hey, this is my thought, that is the act of creating an I, you know, capital I, right? It takes a thinker to have a thought. So we talk about just observing thought, recognizing that thought is not us. That they're just kind of floating out there in the ether, right? But in order to bring one down and say, hey, listen to this thought I just had. Listen to all the I in that, and not just in the words, listen to the I, you know. But feel that. You can feel that contraction. It's kind of like the quantum field. You know how in the quantum field all possibilities exist until we grab one and bring it down and then it solidifies into matter. It's the same idea. You know, all these thoughts are just floating around, but once we give one believing attention, once we say, hey, that's my thought, it's the same thing. We create that thinker. Paul Hederman talks about that in terms of, he quotes Ramana Maharshi, and I'm trying to think how he says it. The thought presupposes the thinker. If you see a thought and go, that was my thought, again, that thinker is like a solid thing in your awareness. Okay. So thanks for letting me talk about that. So this next section is called Why We Haven't Discovered Our Greatest Natural Gift. Locke says, you might be asking, if awake awareness as the source of effortless mindfulness is already here, why haven't I discovered it yet? This is a good question. One reason we don't discover it is that we don't have awake awareness on most of our Western psychological maps. Many people who have longed and strived to be free of suffering have missed awake awareness. Not because they lack desire or commitment, but because they didn't know what to look for or where to look. There's lots of words in this book that I'm going to mispronounce. I'm just telling you. The Shangpa Kagyu tradition of Tibetan Buddhism gives four insightful reasons we don't naturally discover awake awareness, which I find quite helpful. And I'm going to read the list to you. One, awake awareness is so close that you can't see it. Two, awake awareness is so subtle that you can't understand it. Three, awake awareness is so simple that you can't believe it. That's a good one. Four, awake awareness is so good that you can't accept it. Let's take a closer look at each of these. One, awake awareness is so close that you can't see it. So close that you can't see it means that awake awareness is hidden in plain sight. It is closer than your own breath. We can't find awake awareness because awake awareness is not an it. Awake awareness is neither an object nor thing that can be seen heard, touched, smelled, or tasted. It isn't a thought, emotion, image, belief, feeling, or even energy. Awake awareness is invisibly inherent within us, and it's where we're looking from. We need to learn how to have awake awareness look within, turn around, or rest back so that awake awareness can discover itself. Then, awake awareness is the source of mind from which we are able to perceive. And I just want to, what came into my mind when I was reading that was the how helpful Michael Langford's discussion of awareness is, and awareness watching awareness. He's like, we're just talking about ordinary awareness. You know, when you go to bed, your awareness isn't there because you're like asleep. But when you wake up in the morning, awareness, awake awareness is what wakes up. Right? It's what's aware of your feet touching the floor. It's just that simple. And all we're being asked to do by Michael Langford, by Locke Kelly, by any of these folks, is to turn that around. Now the idea of turning it around throws some people, certainly threw me for a very, very long time. You know, it's like, well, you want me to like turn in my chair? I mean, you know, I didn't really think that, but I just spatially, I couldn't get it. So I really appreciate the other words that he uses here. Rest back. Look within. It's simple. It's not complicated. You know, Cheryl says it's paying attention. Exactly, Cheryl. Yeah, it's paying attention. It's like we learn in General Healing Year One. We're casters of attention. And for most of our lives, our attention has been cast on thought. Seemingly the outside world, but really thought. It's what we think about the outside world, right? So all we're talking about doing is resting that activity. Just resting that activity. And so this recommendation that we rest back is like, I'm just going to rest that activity and see what's here now. And that's all he's talking about, I think, when he talks about turning around, resting back, so that awake awareness can discover itself. Last week I was asking you all your experience of the glimpses, and I appreciate the comments on the board about your experience while we were listening to the Mindful Glimpse. So I will remember to do that in the future. I see Dawn liked the music and Cheryl thought it was a distraction. We're all different. let me ask, though, as long as we're talking about this, how was the volume? Could you hear my voice over the... Okay, good, good. All right. Okay, so let's look at second reason we don't naturally discover awake awareness. We just looked at number one, awake awareness is so close that you can't see it. Now we're going to look at number two, awake awareness is so subtle that you can't understand it. Locke says, so subtle that you can't understand it means we can't know awake awareness with our thinking mind. And I'm going to stop right there because I just want to say that's the way we've known everything. You know, however many years old you are, that's how many years you've been interacting with everything through your thinking mind. And, you know, Course in Miracles calls that the veil. NTI calls that the filter. It's all filtered through there. So that's what we're used to doing. You know, it's like having these blinders and this is how we do it. We just go out at things. That's what we're used to doing. So he says, so subtle that you can't understand it means we can't know awake awareness with our thinking mind. Well, what do you mean? How do I do it then? Right? He says, neither the five senses, the thinking mind, the ego, the will, the imagination, and he says, nor attention can know awake awareness. And let me just, again, let me stop there and remind us all that just like Don liked the music and Cheryl didn't, right? We use words differently, right? And if you're and if you're hearing this word through the way that we've described it in Awakening Together, attention, we are casters of attention, that sentence, that would trip us up, right? It's like, well, if I don't use my attention, what the hell do I use? but it's not, the difference, I think, is that it's not thinking attention. Cheryl says she did like the music. Okay, Cheryl, I'll quit using that example. And I think that he's talking about, you know, because attention normally does do that thinking thing we were talking about a minute ago. I got my hands up by my head for anybody that's listening on the radio, you know. It's that, you know, it's that, through the eyes, through the head focus, it's that left brain focus that he's talking about. That left brain, analytical, let me dissect this thing with my attention. That's what he's talking about, I think, when he's talking about attention here. Yeah. So spotlight. Good. Good. Laser, Don says. Sometimes it feels like a laser. Yeah. That's not what we're talking about. But it's that subtle attention, that soft attention, the Buddha eyes, right? The same thing that we just did in this eyes of awareness with a soft gaze. Simply see what is here in front of you. Notice the awareness that's looking through your eyes. Now close your eyes and notice the same awareness that is looking out is still there. It's that soft attention that we use to gaze upon awareness. Yeah, and Don says it feels more diffuse, more open. Absolutely. Okay, so let's look at this again. He says, just as the eye cannot hear sounds, thinking and attention cannot know awake awareness. Only awake awareness can know awake awareness. How sweet is that? That is the Buddha eyes. That is the diffuse awareness, right? I mean, it's just beautiful. Only awake awareness can know awake awareness. Awake awareness is experiential. It is a more direct way of knowing that is beyond thought or prior to thought, although it can utilize thought when needed. What you'll discover as you do mindful glimpses is how to separate awake awareness from our thinking mind and have awake awareness know directly without using conceptual knowing. And to me, that is just so exciting. This is what, you know, we talk about guidance a lot in Awakening Together. This is the knowing without thinking, right? I mean, that's a real simple definition for guidance. We talk about the thoughts, the next thing to do, the next step, just dropping in, right? Or just, there's an event coming up and I know with every fiber of my being that I'm to be at that event. And it's not because I thought through it and I went, well, it's been a while since I've been to an event and I've got the money and that. No, that's not how it works. It's just that knowing. And so it's really exciting for him to say this, and I'll read that sentence again. What you'll discover as you do mindful glimpses is how to separate awake awareness from our thinking mind and have awake awareness know directly without using conceptual knowing. Yeah, and Cheryl says of this focus, it's all the sounds within and without and just being observant, not thinking about it or judging the experience. Yeah. Amen. Okay. All right. And that takes us to the third reason we don't naturally discover awake awareness. Awake awareness is so simple that you can't believe it, which is funny. So I'm interested to see what he's got to say about it. He says, so simple that you can't believe it, because once it's discovered, awake awareness is natural and not complex. The only thing that makes it seem difficult is that it's unknown. until it's discovered. Many people who are looking for spiritual fireworks are surprised when the aha holds no drama. However, you feel free of suffering, free from worry about worry, free from fear of fear, and free from anger at anger. This simplicity is why, in Zen Buddhism, awake awareness is often called ordinary mind. How about that? It's beautiful. Yeah. And then the fourth reason we don't naturally discover awake awareness is awake awareness is so good that you can't accept it. Locke says, so good that you can't accept it because you didn't need to earn it, develop it, or be good enough to get it. Yeah, and it's so funny that mechanism, that ego mechanism, you know, the way we get ahead in life, right, is just totally useless, and not only useless in this quest, not only useless, but a block, a real block. Give me more of that. And you know, I've certainly seen that in me. I go back and listen to some of my old sad songs. How'd you get it? I want it. How'd you get it? So it's just really sweet to see it written here. So good that you can't accept it because you didn't need to earn it, develop it, or be good enough to get it. It's hard to believe that the well-being, innocence, and basic goodness that you've been looking for is who you truly are. Awake awareness is deeper than any shame-based feelings or long-held beliefs of being worthless, wrong, bad, stupid, or unlovable. You can begin to feel an inherent sense of safety and support that you had previously been looking for in things, people, and achievements. And it's so cool that this just, you know, Cheryl, give me that thing. It's so cool here because there's a congruence of these teachings that we've been looking at, that the I am bad thought that he talks about here is a block to awareness of who we truly are, right? And this idea that because we have these feelings that I am bad, I'm lacking, you know, we look at our outside world and you go, tell me I'm good enough. I'm good enough, right? Right? Or, see, I went to Harvard Law School, so I'm good enough, right? But all of that activity is just a cover, right? It just covers over what's really going on. And all that ever needed to be done was to let go of that denial of the truth, let go of that belief that I'm not good enough, that maybe one day I'll be good enough if I get this stuff done. All that needs to be done is that needs to be let go of. He says you can begin to feel an inherent sense of safety and support that you had previously been looking for in things, people, and achievements. It relieves you of the pressure to try to do things perfectly. I got to laugh. Now, it's really funny. I've been dealing with that issue lately, and I've been saying, you may have heard me say it, that at the Releasing the I Am Bad Belief retreat, I really saw that I believe making a mistake is proof that I am bad. You know, I'm trying to cover this up all the time, but then, oh, it slips out, I make a mistake, and now everybody knows I'm bad. You know, I mean, you didn't think about it logically like that, right? But I uncovered all this stuff and went, oh, shoot, look at that. And so in the past couple weeks, I've been making mistakes left and right. Left, I mean, you wouldn't know, I missed a plane. The big one I like to point to is I missed a plane because I planned my timing wrong. I was only off by 2 hours. But all these little mistakes are coming up, and it's just really glorious because I got to see what mistakes meant in the past, and now I get to look at them and go, oh my God, they're so funny. And they are, and now they're just really, really funny. So it's just funny here for him to talk about the need to do things perfectly. Yeah, Sharon says, I'm so stupid. Yeah, exactly. That's what mine says when you make a mistake. Yeah. thanks, Dawn. Okay, so let's look at this again. I'll try and get through it without laughing. It relieves you of the pressure to try to do things perfectly or become somebody someday so that in the amorphous future, you will be okay. Discovering awake awareness as the source of mind and the foundation of our identity is such a precious feeling that some people have tears of joy upon finally feeling it. You get to come home to who you have always been. You may or may not have heard me and Connie talk about having had that experience at Endeavor Academy. Both of us, maybe not at the same time, but just like for me, and when I went to some, Forgiveness Week or something in Endeavor Academy, some event they were having, it was like a, oh, I'm not who I thought I was. I mean, it was the first time that it had really dawned on my mind. I grew up with my father was a minister and looked at the Christian mystics and all of that. But really, the first time that I really, really dawned on me that it was possible that I was not the person that I'd always thought I was Endeavor Academy. And I remember that aha moment and then just tears of gratitude and uproarious laughter, frankly, about that I'd been confused all of those years. That's been a while now. Okay. He says it's such a precious feeling that some people have tears of joy upon finally feeling it. You get to come home to who you have always been. And I'm quite certain all of you have had that feeling. It really is a feeling of, oh, this is home. This is home. Sweet. Dawn said, I had a recent epiphany that did that too. Brought tears to my eyes. How sweet. How sweet. Okay. Oh, time for another glimpse. Yay. All right. So. And I'm going to share my screen, ask you to close your eyes. Okay, this glimpse is called The Peace Within. And the question is, what is here now if the peace you are seeking is already here? What is here now if the peace you are seeking is already here? Thank you.
ask you to slowly open your eyes. Stay in that peace.
Okay, and I would like to give you an opportunity to share. Anybody who wants to share their experience with that glimpse, please do so. Yes, George.
Actually, I could have gone to sleep sitting up here. It's very relaxing.
That's awesome. Good. Yeah. Cheryl said dropping into the heart felt so good. Susan, please share.
For me, the music was very helpful. I usually don't listen to music while I'm meditating. So that was extremely peaceful. Thank you for choosing that. It was a going inward experience, just a deep breath and then just a falling into. Nice. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I usually listen to music when I meditate. It just, you know, seems so. Keeps me from being distracted. And the name of the meditation music, Cheryl has asked, it's Dan Gibson, Relax Peacefully. And it lasts for like 53 minutes. Dan Gibson, Relax Peacefully. And he has some other ones on there as well, on YouTube. Yeah. Okay. We'll start now. We're on page 22. We'll start with the next section. Awakening as the next natural stage of human development. The way of effortless mindfulness is one approach to living from awareness and compassion. Let me read that sentence again. The way of effortless mindfulness is one approach to living from awareness and compassion. Effortless mindfulness begins as a meditation practice, but becomes a holistic way of sustaining our most optimal way of living, the shift that has traditionally been called awakening. It's a term shared by many religions, used by spiritual teachers, and studied by historians. In the introduction, I defined awakening as a shift and upgrade of awareness, mind, and self. A fuller definition of awakening is moving from our current limited mind and small self to a new, upgraded operating system of optimal mind and expansive, interconnected self, with a capital S, interconnected self. Locke says the term awakening is an apt one because people who've had the experience report that it resembles waking from a dream. We spend much of our lives sleepwalking while hoping the project of improving and developing our separate sense of self will help us feel happy and connected. If I can just get this thing right, you know, any day now I'm going to be happy, right? When we wake up from this daydream, we may be surprised to realize that our limited perspective is only a small part of a vaster reality. Yeah, beyond anything the thinking mind can conceptualize. That's the beauty. He says, awakening may seem like a distant, unattainable goal or a lofty challenge, but it's no more unreachable than any other stage of learning and growth that you've already lived through. Awakening is not limited to those who join a monastery, live in a cave, or are Olympic athletes of meditation. After working with thousands of meditation students and psychotherapy clients, as well as colleagues who teach meditation, neuroscience, and developmental psychology, what I've learned is this: awakening is the next natural stage of human development. how wonderful is that, right? It's not just Ramana Maharshi, Buddha, Jesus. That's it. That's the only ones that get to, you know, okay, maybe Nisargadatta, right? It's not that at all. It's the next stage. It's and here we are, primed for it, primed for it. What else would we be doing here? He says, there are many ways to awaken. Some are spontaneous and may occur during a time of great peace and connection with a beloved or with nature. Some occur during a time of heartbreak and hopelessness. And more than one person has told me that they were having a breakdown, they had a breakthrough. However it happens, the small mind and small self reach their limits, and awake awareness shines through. The next natural, what, you know, when you go, where do you go? That limit isn't actually there. You break right through into awake awareness. He says, effortless mindfulness is a practice that leads to and supports awakening. Locke says, at the top of page 23, he says, initially, we wake up from the small mind and small sense of self and into awake awareness as the boundless ground, the unity of the infinite and the finite. Then we wake into an embodied, interconnected feeling of flow and being home. Then we wake out to natural, creative, and compassionate activity and relationship with others. So let's read that paragraph again. And I recall him talking about this quite a bit in our satsang. So if you're so moved, you may want to go back and listen to him explain this process right here. He says, initially, we wake up from the small mind and small sense of self and into awake awareness as the boundless ground, the unity of the infinite and the finite. Then we wake into an embodied, interconnected feeling of flow and being home. Then we wake out to natural, creative, and compassionate activity and relationship with others. It's beautiful, you know? We get it, and then we extend it. That's, you know, that becomes who we are. We embody that and live that in the world. He says, I believe that awakening is a natural stage of human development and that we need to humbly and honestly share stories with each other about our own growth in this regard so that we can open the conversation and normalize this concept in our culture. How about that, right? Go tell your bridge buddies about this. and you know what? Those can be hard conversations to have. And you know, it's not like really like proselytizing. It's really when you live from there, your light shines. Right. And people see that and when they're going, can you believe what that other girl did to me? Blah, blah, blah. You can go, whatever it is. Right. You respond from your awareness of who you really are and what's really going on here. And that's all that's being required. Nobody's talking about, you know, pulling somebody into church with you. It's really being that embodiment of what you're coming to learn about who you really are. Locke says, for me, initial awakening was a radical shift to uncover an essential dimension of well-being, a feeling that everything is ultimately okay, that who I am, that who I essentially am is okay. Nothing needs to be different. Nothing needs to be different. I don't need to be different. Nothing in my environment needs to be different. All is well. All the time. This realization is nothing like imagination, belief, or a temporary meditation state. Although awake awareness is invisible, the knowing that all is well is as real and intimate as the feeling of my body breathing. What is revealed with awakening is a sense of interconnection with everyone and a realization that we are essentially the same. It feels like unconditional love, as if there are no circumstances that could change this emotion. And I just really, really feel that. And what comes to mind as I read that sentence is certainly anybody who's a parent or a pet owner can relate to this sentence. And I'm sure that there are other circumstances. Those are the ones that come to mind. But it's like, you know, no matter what your kid does, no matter how unaware your child seems to be, no matter how angry or rebellious or whatever, you know, does your love for that child change? Not an iota, not ever, not in any way. Same for the cat, right? You're petting the cat scratches you or bites you, you know, are you mad? Do you sulk, right? You lock the cat out of the house for a week? No. You go right back to loving the cat. Yeah, in fact, Inner Wisdom said something like that to me at one point. You know, would you, I don't know, I was upset with somebody. He's like, would you feel that way about Grace, my cat? And I'm like, oh, I guess not. But again, here Locke says, what is revealed with awakening is a sense of interconnection with everyone and a realization that we are all essentially the same. That's the point. He said, it feels like unconditional love, as if there are no circumstances that could change this emotion. The new view is from a tender-hearted presence that is here, even when challenging things are happening. Over the years, with consistent practice of effortless mindfulness, this foundation of freedom, well-being, and unconditional love has become the new normal for me and many of my colleagues and students. With practice, it can become yours as well. Locke says, the way of effortless mindfulness is practiced through small glimpses of awake awareness as a way to fine-tune our consciousness in the midst of our day. When we get caught in thought, we can learn to return, learn to return. When we get caught in thought, we can learn to return and train to remain as our awakened nature. Locke, he's so cute. Isn't he cute? Yeah, he is. We can learn to return and train to remain as our awakened nature. After a series of small glimpses, many times, effortless mindfulness becomes second nature. We trust the feeling of knowing and talking from what feels like a continuous intuition. We know by heart without the paralysis of analysis, like gliding down a hill on a bicycle with our hands off the handlebar. Sweet, sweet. We know by heart. Okay, time for another glimpse. Y'all ready? Yay. All right. So this one is called How to Do Not Doing. And I will ask you to close your eyes. Why am I not hearing anything? Y'all hear anything? Huh. Okay. How to do not doing. Can you let go? Let me just settle in because the lack of music is really perplexing to me. So let me just shake that off.
Actually, it was working, then it stopped.
It's so weird. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me just reload that and see what happens, please. I don't hear a thing. Y'all hear anything? So weird. Okay, we're going to do this one without any music. Let's see if I can figure out. I think my program just decided. Anyway.
Check your volume, maybe. On the.
I did. It's weird. I could try it again. Let me try it one more time. There it is. I think it was just a real quiet point. Can you all hear that? Oh, I haven't started it. Wait a minute. Let me ask if you can hear it now. You hear it? Yes. Yay. Thank you, George. Okay. Now. Deep breath. Close your eyes. Out. Come on. Doing. There's a single question. And this is the question. Can you let go into the awake awareness that is resting deeper than sleep? Can you let go into the awake awareness that is resting deeper than sleep? Into the awake awareness that is resting deeper than sleep, yet wide awake. You to slowly open your eyes, in that space. Would anyone like to share their experience with the how to do not doing glimpse? Dawn.
I felt like as a few technical difficulties were happening, even with the intention, there was it felt so light, like nothing was wrong. It was like, it wasn't engaging that side of the brain. I'm pointing to the left side of my brain for those listening on the Awakening Together radio. And I noticed that with Locke Kelly, maybe because of other glimpse practices I've done, I noticed my awareness behind me opening up. Mm. more than usual. And I noticed it almost wanting to happen in layers, just slowly, almost like a one little tiny layer at a time. Like, okay, it's safe here. Okay, we can go one more layer. Oh, stay here. We can go back. We can, you know, just going back, back, back. And of course, already for me, when I drop in, is this part in the front and to the sides, especially when I do his little trick that we're going to learn later on, or you may have learned from Adyashanti or others, is peripheral vision. When you open that up, that's an immediate way to soften your gaze, and it helps you open up spatially to what's beside you. But I feel like a lot of the block, maybe it's just me, but is that behind? Because you don't see back there, you know? So to open up spatially, it's literally almost to the mystery, because you don't know what's behind you. You can sense what's behind you, but that's not with the eyes. That's with that other sense. So that's what happened for me. And every single time we did a glimpse practice, it was, you would say, okay, now I want you to open your eyes. I was like, no, I don't want to. Don't make me. It was just like, I literally had to force myself to pull, like, just like, make myself come back. And each time I was just like, oh, please just let me stay. It was not good. It was like, I don't want to. Don't make me leave.
Well, the good news, Dawn, is you're getting ready to take a break, so you can stay there for an hour now.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll do this again next week. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for letting me share. It's glorious to be here with you.